Hello and welcome to Booktopia on. I am Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about page to screen adaptations. We've done one of these podcasts before, but you know, it's
you never run out of things to say about this.
Exactly. Because there are so many incredible books out there, and many of them are heading to the big screen or to the small screen. And
where would the film and TV industry be without books to adapt?
At the moment, nowhere.
Yeah, it
just
really feels that way.
Marvel.
Everything good, everything hugely popular that you can think of that's been a massive craze has come from a book.
Yeah, Girl on the Train, Gone Girl, Big Little Lies. This is one after
Game
another.
Of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Like, wow, has there been a craze, like a massive film or television thing that just grabbed, like, everyone's attention and went into the zeitgeist, yada, yada, that didn't come from a book?
Yeah, comics, are a cousin of books. So,
this is true.
Yeah, comics count as books.
Yeah, so all of Marvel, all DC, all those ones remade over and over again.
Yeah.
I'm sure
perhaps it would be more of a challenge to think of
screen
something that was originally written for the screen. I suppose J.K. Rowling has done both now, so she had her books adapted and now she's writing straight
but
from
it's
movies.
From the world, it's from the same world that originated from books. So I, in my mind, it still counts. Like, even though the screenplay is written after the movie, I still count them as something
it's
that's
all part
from
of
the
same
world.
Thing.
Yeah.
Are there any coming up that I'm really excited for? There's a BBC Les Miserables coming.
Oh.
And it's not the musical, guys. There's going to be no singing.
Oh.
It's just going to be the story.
I'm happy about that.
And as much as I like, I'm not dissing the musical. I enjoy it, but it's not the same.
No.
As it's actually quite a jarring experience if you've ever done it to read the book and watch the musical close together, because it's not really a singing matter. Like, it
but maybe that's
really
why they added the singing to make it a little more, you know,
they both
soft.
Well, they both stand well on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've just read the book and you try and watch the musical, it seems preposterous to you that
right.
they're plowing through the story.
Well, they've already done it. They've done it a few times. This is the thing, is they keep coming back to these. Is there no,
because all the best stories are books.
Yes, all the best stories. They keep coming back and they keep reinventing them. Wasn't that, that's only 20 years ago, 15 years ago, they did a full miniseries of it.
And then they did do a movie with Jeffrey Rush that wasn't musical.
Can you imagine trying to get that fat book into?
Well, a miniseries, I think, gives you more room to do it.
But miniseries is not big enough. For that book, it's so huge. And if they're talking about, what were they talking about the other day? They're talking about turning in, I think it was a Alex Rider, Anthony Horowitz, they're turning that into a series. Like, only one book is going to be an 8-part series.
Well, that was a movie already, wasn't it?
Yeah, but if one of the Alex Rider books can be turned into an 8-part series, then the Hugo's Les Mis can be turned into a
7-series
epic, you know, with
45-minute
with 45-minute episodes.
That's actually a great idea. I'd love 7 seasons of Les Mis.
Yeah, did you see the? I mean, I say all that, and then I'll backtrack, because the War and Peace miniseries was awesome.
I actually have not seen it.
That was really good. And for someone who, I love that book and I love all the characters in it, and they did a pretty fair job of trying to get everyone a go and getting the story going and rolling across and giving a kind of an insight into it was, and the great thing about that series was it sparked interest in War and Peace. And so in the UK and even in Australia, the book started to go up the bestseller list.
That's so good.
So that's the best thing. That's the best result you could possibly have.
It actually has such a great knock-on effect for book sales.
Not always.
Oh, what's
one of the ones that one of the books that you used to be able to sell non-stop for decades, like 50 years, was Tolkien. And as soon as those movies came out, Tolkien sales just cocked it.
Oh, wow.
So no one wants to read the books anymore. They just want to watch the movies.
So, you know, even those film tie-ins, around the time that first movie came out, the book sales went up.
Yeah.
But they're so satisfying, so long.
Yeah.
That you kind of,
maybe this is an argument against the 7 seasons of Les Mis. Maybe we keep the book to be the really, because you don't want to cancel out
the synopsis.
Book. Yeah.
A miniseries was just a synopsis.
Yeah, just fast forward through it. Just a taster, and then read the book.
Why do we think it happened with Tolkien and not, like, Harry Potter, for example?
I think because I don't know. I think it's the length of those movies and the grandeur and majesty of them.
They became classics almost immediately.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
The last word in there. But that, aren't they, wasn't there talk that they're doing a TV series of it?
That seems familiar, but I can't remember whatever happened with that.
I thought it was mad because they've just made these, I mean, in my mind, just. But then,
yeah. It was a very long time ago.
But it's so recent.
The original trilogy was ages ago.
How long? 10 years? 15 years?
2002?
20 years or something. Like, wasn't it the beginning of the century?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, 15 or so years ago.
Yeah, so just a little while ago.
It's 2018, Bron.
I know. Time. But I'm not that old, and they were... It was in my lifetime. Like, that's when I was sort of in high school and they were the thing.
Yeah, it was in my lifetime is going to start meaning less and less to you as time goes on.
Painting a real positive picture here, guys.
Do you guys have all-time favourites that you actually continue reading over and over and you continue watching the film over and over?
Gosh, that's a hard question.
I put out mine once. I've written the view. Everyone knows that anyway.
Oh yeah.
I've watched that movie all the time, and I read that book all the time.
You know, that is a great. I can't imagine them making a better film out of that book than the one they've made. Yeah. I don't think I'd even want to see it.
Yeah.
I think. And I actually can't recall whether I read or I watched first, because I don't know. Lucy Honeychurch is just
Lucy.
She's Helena Bonham Carter, and that's inextricable. Like, it always will be.
And Maggie Smith.
Yes. Oh gosh, she's good in that. No, that's a great one. I also, and I know, you know, I will see Pride and Prejudice anytime it's done, and I'll enjoy them all.
Yeah.
But I guess I really do have the fondest attachment to the BBC Colin Firth one. And I don't know why. I think I'm not even arguing that it's the best one. I think it's just the one that...
Maybe it's the one that did you watch it first? Is that?
I guess, yeah. And I think that it was just a thing. Like, everyone was so into it.
Whereas my first one was the Keira Knightley version.
Yeah.
And it holds a special place in my heart, even though I still love the Colin Firth one. And I love all adaptations I see of it and all twists and turns. But it's just something about the Keira Knightley one. I'm like... That's mine.
Maybe you imprint on one and then that's it.
I didn't. I was so angry at the man coming out of the water scene. No, but that whole
mini series, but look what it did for Pride and Prejudice.
I know what it did for it, but it
because it's not in the book.
It's very much not.
There's a lot of stuff that's not in. Yeah. And I just didn't like it. I didn't like. I felt that Pride and Prejudice had such a youthful verve to it as a book. And I think the Keira Knightley one actually captured that youthfulness and a bit more light and shade. I think
it's beautiful, that film, and it did capture. I think in a lot of ways it's a better Lizzie and a better Mr. Darcy, but I think a lot of the side characters were better done in BBC. Like, I think that you,
like Lydia and Kitty and people. You mean.
Yeah, I think you have to really like, particularly with the Mr. and Mrs. Bennett, they still have to be lovable, but you have to feel that annoyance. And that is hard to do. And I feel like it was well done in the BBC version. But in the Keira Knightley version, the mother was too annoying.
Yeah.
And who was it? Was it Donald Sutherland as the dad? Yeah, I feel like he just wasn't. He was, I don't know, not...
That last scene with him, come on, when she actually goes in there and asks him to...
Look, there's no bad version. I can't think of a bad Pride and Prejudice version. I could talk for hours about the bad Jane Eyres that have happened, and I've never been satisfied with a single Jane Eyre adaptation that I've ever seen.
Is that something because of the... And this is what I was going to talk about as we move along. Some books almost give so much to a filmmaker that they can't stuff it up. You know, if they follow the rules... Yes. Then they're going to do it well. But if like a Jane Eyre is a few steps back and there are things that they can interpret, and try to envisage themselves because it leaves more to the imagination. I think that Jane Austen is so clear, crystal clear on everything.
The world in the book. And the tone and that. Yeah, you're right. And I sometimes feel like when they make a movie of Jane Eyre, they think they're making an Austen movie and they miss.
Yeah.
All the delicious drama and gothicness. I think it kind of happens a little bit with Wuthering Heights as well.
Sometimes
I think they don't know what they're doing.
No.
It's like they try and make it into a romance. Like, it's just they never really quite get it.
It is a completely messed up story, and everyone tries to fit it into a box. And if you're going to make a film, you've got to put it in a box. And there's no box that fits Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, like, just read the book 5 times and then do that. You know, like, get rid of any other. It's not a Jane Austen novel. It's not a grand romance. Yeah. You can't.
It's not a horror.
Yeah, you've got to just, oh. It would be great if someone did it really well. And again, I don't know, has it ever been a miniseries or has it only ever been films?
Oh, it has been a miniseries. It had the fellow that Lilian Chin tweeted about the other day.
Oh!
He's in all the... he's in Taboo.
No, that was a film.
Was that a film?
Yeah.
No, I thought it was a series.
Wasn't it?
I thought it was a series.
Maybe it was a 2-parter or something.
Oh, okay.
But I mean like a real 6-part miniseries.
No one actually mentioned his name. I can't remember his name.
I know it, and it's Tom something.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, thank
Thomas
you.
Thomas Hardy. Our good friend Thomas Hardy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's someone that they haven't actually gone back to for a while.
Yeah, they haven't, have they? They did. They did a few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that any good? I didn't see it.
It was good.
I ran away from those.
No, that was a good one.
Okay.
I liked it.
It's like, you know, I have a full...
I know, it would be... Probably, maybe you would disagree with me, but I liked it.
Jude was good. Did you ever get the power to read Jude? To watch Jude after reading
Jude? No, I never did, because I think after reading it, I was like, I can't handle the thought of seeing any kind of... I don't want to see the...
You did.
I don't want to see anything.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to see... But Kate Winslet, wasn't it? She was in it, and one who was Doctor Who for 5 minutes.
Doctor Who for 5 minutes?
Was it the ninth Doctor?
No, it was ages ago. He was really old. Like, he was really only a Doctor Who for 5 seconds. And that was really brilliantly done. But, anything new? Like, there's The Hate U Give that's coming.
In terms of what's coming up, so much. And I've got a list. And my phone is locked, so I'm just unlocking it. But there's so much. So we've got, The Hate U Give. And every time I watch the trailer for that, I just...
Get more excited.
This movie is going to be massive.
Yeah.
It's just a movie that it's just a movie of now.
Off the time.
And it's very much going to explode, I think. And that will be one that I believe does have the knock-on effect of just making the book go crazy. Because the book already went crazy.
Absolutely.
It was a huge book, and I think it's just going to be huge again.
It'll probably be one that they, alongside the book, study at school.
Yeah.
Because it's a really important topic.
I just hope they don't just skip the book and just start studying the
film. But you know they're probably
That always happens these days.
As long as it's
a good movie.
I feel like it's going to be a good, faithful film version of the book. I don't think they're going to take too much license with that story.
I saw that there's a new Jack Ryan series coming.
Yes, that's got the greatest... man in the world in it. What's his name?
Oh, I...
Married to Emily Blunt. Why can't we remember any actor's names
John
now?
Krasinski. I fucking love that man.
The most likable man on the planet. And I can't wait to see him as
Wait,
Jack
what
Ryan.
Is this?
So, Tom Jack
Clancy.
Ryan.
Tom Clancy.
And he was played by Harrison Ford, and he's also been played by someone else, I feel.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Sorry, there was an in-between, and then there was Chris.
Someone else between them?
Yeah.
So I remember being quite, like, you know when you're young and your parents want to watch a film?
Yes.
And you are not interested in this movie because you want to watch, I don't know, a kid's
anything
scene.
Else.
Yeah. but I remember watching one of the Harrison Ford ones with my parents and being like, and I think Sean Bean was in it or something.
Yeah, Sean Bean, like, Patriot Games.
Yeah, and I was scared, silly, but also very intrigued by this very grown-up film that we watched. And then he did a few, right? And then something else happened.
Yeah.
And then we had Chris Pine did a...
Captain Kirk,
yeah. Yeah. And now we've got John Krasinski in a TV show.
Nice.
But the first one was done, Hunt for the Red October, was...
Was that a Jack Ryan? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a Jack Ryan. That's the first one. And the man is now... What's that 30 Rock show? What's the guy, the main guy?
This is the podcast of trying to remember actors' names. This is so funny. 30 Rock. Mm. You mean Alec Baldwin?
Him.
Okay.
So he was young and thin once. And he was in this. He played Jack Ryan.
I bet you he was equally attractive all the way through, though.
Mm-hmm.
It was the era from that moment. Then all of the brothers became movie stars, and then all the brothers disappeared again.
The Baldwins.
All the Baldwins.
Except Alec.
Yeah, Alec just remained.
Yeah. And now all their kids are famous.
Oh, God.
Do you know what I'm really excited for, which is a little more on the fun side, is To All the Boys I've Loved Before?
Yes. There's a couple of fun Netflix movies. I think Netflix is jumping on this, like, what's a fast way to sort of...
launch a
Yeah,
a
you
movie.
Can just adapt.
And people are all over Netflix. So, I mean, that is in my diary. I'm like, I'm... that night. I'm
yeah, August 17th.
That. Yeah.
We should have a To All the Boys I've Loved Before party. So that's a series by Jenny Han. It's really popular. I've never read it, but I've heard Neither. Great things about it. And the Netflix movie looks like it's going to be great. There's also a next Netflix movie coming up that's a teen retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac called Sierra Burgess is a Loser, which looks interesting. Looks very interesting. So it's gender flipped. So Cyrano is a girl. And she ends up, like, through the internet falling in love with this guy who doesn't know what she really looks like. And then she enlists somehow.
Is it like a makeover thing?
It's Cyrano de Bergerac, but, like.
Well, I don't know that, so.
Okay, so.
Have you seen Roxanne with Steve Martin?
No.
Yeah.
Any film that you've. Have you seen? There was one. Oh, this got. This is not the first teen retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac. It happened in the 90s or the early noughties with, again. I can't remember his name. He's not a great guy. He's like got a brother who's also an actor. Franco, James Franco.
Oh,
you heard it here first.
The kind of creepy. He always plays a creepy role.
Look, I really like him in things, but his personal life is questionable.
Yes.
So, but as far as I love a lot of James Franco movies, and he did do a Cyrano de Bergerac retelling that you may have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, any film you've ever seen where someone tell someone what to say to impress someone, and then they fall in love with the person themselves. That's what you're
I love
at.
That kind of premise. Solved.
You've probably seen a dozen Cyrano de Bergerac retellings, but now there's a Netflix one coming.
Is the Ugly Truth one of those?
I know that is.
That is an exact premise.
Probably. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes.
I want to Google that now.
There's also, and I think it started possibly, but we don't have it in Australia yet. Dietland is a show that's based on a book by Sarai Walker that always sounded really interesting to me.
Is it a non-fiction book?
No, it's a fiction book.
Oh.
And it's got another actor whose name I can't remember, but who's the good wife? Juliette Margulies.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
I believe it.
She's in it, not as the main character, but it looks really good. I'm looking forward to that. There's You by Caroline Kepnes is...
that creepy crime one.
Gossip Girl style.
Yeah.
Gonna be in it. The guy from Gossip Girl.
Sharp Objects is another one.
Damn. Sharp Objects is happening right now. It's very.
And that's Amy Adams in that.
Yeah, it's very.
That's who's the
Gillian Flynn, author of Gone Girl. And Amy Adams is starring in this. It's HBO and it's, it's beautiful. And creepy. It's much like the book, really, and very sort of slow, languorous pace. So because they've given, I think it's 6 episodes, they're really like, they're not rushing through the book.
Oh, I love that.
But it's haunting and sort of mesmerizing, and I'm watching it week to week. It's really, really disturbing. It's reminding me that the book is actually something of a head. I can't say that word. Something of a messes with your head.
Something
rhymes with head truck. it's very super creepy, and it was her debut actually, which I sort of forgot somewhere along the line. But she wrote this book first.
The one that everyone's talking and reading about, reading at the moment and watching is Killing Eve.
Oh, that was amazing. And I haven't read it. No. You should definitely, I mean, I'm sure the book is good, but definitely watch it.
I love the actress. Again, I don't know her name. There we go.
Yeah, but this is.
Sandra Oh.
Thank you.
This one's just great, wasn't it? It was just so weird.
It was so funny. Crazy. So the book. Everyone says the show is loosely based on it. So I don't know how similar it is.
What I find interesting is when you see something that has been based on a book, because books have a greater freedom than anything else.
You can do whatever.
You can do whatever you like. And so... and
no special effects budget.
No, so true. But also with character, because there's no one else but this person and their
You don't have to cast these roles.
You don't have to think about whether, you know, you can have the weirdest kind of unique individual you could possibly come up with and put it in a book, and everyone just goes, yeah. But TV people wouldn't do that. They would, oh, I don't think that's going to work on TV. But they suddenly get this manuscript and it comes to them as a screenplay. And the brave ones put it on, and Killing is one of those.
Did you just solve why? Because at the beginning of this podcast, we asked, why is it that all TV and movies these days seem to come originally from books? Maybe that's why.
I don't believe in art by committee. I believe that there's a certain bravery of a person sitting by themselves expecting nothing out of what they're doing, and they can get away with anything. There's a great license to them to do what the hell they like. And then later on they get judged about it by sales, or whether they actually get published, or whether they go to jail. There's all these things that come together. But in that moment, they're as free as a bird.
You're so right. Because no matter how many people it eventually takes to make the film, and this is no, I'm not saying that the film isn't itself a piece of art, and that takes a lot of people to do. But the idea came from one person's head alone.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe you just have to have that the initial idea just completely unfettered by any kind of budget or any kind of opinion from anyone else.
We spoke to Robo the other day, and he was talking about his first time he's ever been in a screenwriter's room and writing with other humans.
You might want to say Michael Robotham. I was like, for the people listening.
Robo, but he's Michael Robotham, everyone.
Start again.
The first time he's in a room writing with other writers, and he found it thrilling and wonderful and inspiring and the rest of it. I'm just wondering,
got their idea, right? Because he wrote it.
Because he came up with it. And so they're playing with that.
Yeah, I think it's a different kind of magic, because it must be amazing to sit there with a team of people and you bounce ideas off each other, and you know, but when you're adapting something that's already, like, you've got something to work with, it's kind of like saying, here's like all of the paints and everything you need, and a general, really detailed brief, and have fun. But then originally it was someone staring at a blank sheet of paper. Or a blank computer screen, because, you know, it's 2018.
There have been occasions where you see a film and it is just absolute faithful reproduction of the book, and you think, great, it's going to get a wider audience. Like Remains of the Day, I've read that book a few times. I've seen the movie a million times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's brilliant. Like
it is kind of totally the same, isn't
totally
it?
Totally the same, right? And Brideshead Revisited, when they made it a million years ago with Jeremy Irons, you could read the dialogue to the screen, because it was perfectly they lifted it completely. But then there are things like The Thin Red Line, that war book by James Jones, which was it's such a big bloody book, and it's so dark, and it's got so many different characters, and it's too many characters. It's a whole lot of people, a whole lot of men taking Guadalcanal in the Second World War. So it's a huge cast.
Yeah.
And, it was made into a film, and the director, whose name has left me, genius, he does films in a completely weird way. Like, so he gets actors just to he gives them a sense of what's going on, and they ad-lib a lot of this shit.
Wow.
And so there's tons of film, and then he just whittles it down to what he thinks suits. And so he kind of creates something new out of the thing in the past. So I like that as well. I like the ones who do exactly the book, and then I like the ones who go, yeah, it's kind of a dream of the book.
It's like variations on a theme, long as the theme's good.
Yeah, I think that's what you were talking about the other day with all the different things from Austin. Anything.
Austin. Yeah. I mean, I don't ever recall seeing one and going, oh, I'm appalled. I enjoy it. Yeah. I enjoy retellings generally.
What about the zombie one? Did you see that?
Fun.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've
it's fun. I mean, it is what it is. Well, you can't go into it expecting it not
Lost
to.
Lost in Austin, that's one of my favourite ones, but that's just like.
Yeah, again, that was out of left field.
But it does have the, you know, what we're talking about here, you've got the nut of the story there, and then that character just keeps bumping into it.
Yeah, she screws it up, and that's what's entertaining. You're like, oh, no.
And that's why retelling is such a, and it all boils down to my constant bugbear of not believing in spoilers. But when you know what's coming, it gives you the freedom to kind of play around with people's knowledge and expectations. Mm. And so a retelling does that. A good retelling will give you something new within the boundaries of this framework that you already know. And I feel like with the amount of stories that we consume, like the amount of books that we read and everything, usually, like, I mean, a really amazing literature is, like, you can't really predict what will happen because often nothing happens, really. It's not, like, plot-driven. But when a book is largely plot-driven, I reckon most of us could tell you where it's going to end up anyway.
Yeah.
And it's that space within people's expectations that's fun for people to play with. And that's what a movie adaptation is. It's out there, right? The book's out there. Some people, if not all people, know what's going to happen. Doesn't mean that they won't sit down and enjoy it, like, because you want to see what they do with it.
Have you any of you guys ever read a James Bond novel?
No.
I've got to be honest. Because
there are occasions where a character goes into film and goes way beyond the, you know, the books.
Are they all based on a book?
No, there were a lot of them, they touch on them, and there's horrendous books that were written not by Fleming as well that kind of were used as well. But, you know, there are bits and pieces that fit exactly to the Fleming ones, but a lot of the technology is just laughable. and a lot of the cars that he drives around in are just not, that's an old Bentley. Like, these books are old, you know, they're really old. And so if you're going to make a James Bond for now, so many things just have to get railroaded out. But now this character is created of its own thing. It's like Sherlock Holmes. It's like Robin Hood.
It's gone so far beyond the original.
Yeah. And so I picked up on an original, because there are great, just recently, Horowitz has been writing these modern James Bonds, but he's setting them back. And also Boyd, he did a Bond recently, and they're setting them back in that time. And they're really getting into the oldie. But it's certainly
true to form.
Yeah, but it's certainly modern, and it's certainly told at a faster pace. And there's all these things we've learned and we've gotten used to as a modern reader that these new authors are doing to it. It is very much like Robin Hood. In that sense, that this character has gotten bigger than the creator.
Well, another one like that, which has a movie coming up, is Mary Poppins. I think most people reference in their minds the movie more than their books.
Yeah.
But just the character of Mary Poppins is, everyone knows the umbrella, they know, like, the hallmarks of it.
Beautiful sugar, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't have been in the books, would it? The books?
Probably.
Maybe, yeah.
And it's Emily Blunt in this one, is it?
Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of weird when they remake a classic for the first time.
I have faith in her. I think it should be
Well, she's married to the best man in the world.
Exactly. They're the greatest couple
on earth, I'm sure it will be fine.
Yeah.
Jack Ryan and Mary Poppins.
If they divorce them.
I won't come into that.
That's going to, look, I'm already have very little
faith
in goodness, but, like, that will be terrible.
What about when they get it wrong? There'd be a lot of those. I mean,
Jane Eyre.
Yeah, because there have been massive money being put behind the Cassandra Clare stuff. There's been massive money put behind James Patterson's Cross, which went nowhere. He had great success early on with Morgan Freeman playing Cross.
Yeah, I thought it went well.
Yeah, early ones. Yeah. But just only in the last 5 years, there was another one that came out. It was going to be a reboot.
I didn't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. And all that fuss around little shorty Tom Cruise playing enormous Jack Reacher.
But those have been successful.
Yeah, they have. But, you know, there is this sort of, especially with books that have an enormous fandom, they are super critical. If it comes out and it doesn't do it, then they burn.
I still remember the outcry when Tom Cruise was announced to be Jack Reacher. People lost their minds.
Lost their minds. Absolutely lost their minds.
I do not recall this event. I think I was too young.
It was probably, I don't know, when was the first one? Maybe 5 years ago or something.
More than old, yeah. Sad. Time flies.
It really does. So, and I mean, we're probably due another Jack Reacher, right?
What are some of the biggest bombs that you can think of?
Gosh, I mean, I can't really say why, but the Cassandra Clare one, really, they really did stumble there, didn't they? They had to scrap the whole movie and turn it into a TV show.
It was not great.
They didn't do well with the Divergent one. In fact, a lot of the young adult ones, they've tried to turn into big franchises, have failed recently.
They all want Hunger Games.
Yeah, like Maze Runner never really.
It was good, but it wasn't like the first one was good, and then it kind of. And I think same with Divergent. I loved the first one, then it kind of just went downhill from there.
They just weren't successful. No. Like,
I always get so nervous when they announce that they're going to do a book that I like. Because it can be the death of
I get excited and then I get nervous.
Because sometimes in the flames, the book gets burnt. You know, you're like, no, the book's fine. Book's fine.
Then no one ever wants
to. Don't put that together with the movie. No.
Well, I mean, I think I've mentioned, because in our previous Page to Screen podcast, I probably mentioned this too, but the host, Stephanie Meyer, I always enjoyed the book.
It's another one that they just never read.
And the movie was really not that great.
I think everyone raced to get as many young adult books on the screen as possible, and we haven't really had a very hugely successful one since The Hunger Games that I can think of. I don't know, it will come around again, but...
Well, how about, I mean, just before we wrap up, like something that that there's a book out maybe recently in the last year that you would love to see head to the big screen.
I've always thought The Night Circus would be
great. Oh, wow. They could make that quite beautiful, actually.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I know. I even put myself on the spot here.
Another one that would just be visually stunning would be anything by Lainey Taylor. Like, I would like to see Guillermo del Toro direct anything written by Lainey Taylor.
Actually, now that you say it. That would
be a perfect combination.
No, they say it, Leigh Bardugo. Like, the Six of Crows. Imagine that on the big screen.
Yeah, that would work.
That'd be like Italian Job in Fantasy World. Like, it would just be this big
heist. I think they sold that book as Ocean Eleven.
Yeah, there you go. Game of
Thrones.
But Voice World's Universe would be...
That would be great. Oh, my gosh.
It's probably heading that way.
Yeah, most likely. It's already got the huge Universal release.
And everyone's comparing it to Jasper Jones. And, yeah.
There's more going on. I mean, this book's got so many levels and so many different stories and different times.
Yeah. That would be great for the Australian film industry to do.
Yeah. Well, we had we've got the second series of Big Little Lies coming.
Yeah, what do we think of that when it goes beyond the book?
That worries me, but with the people who are involved in it, you would think that it's going to be okay.
Well, because it happened with Handmaid's Tale, and I know that the general consensus is that it's great, but I still haven't watched season 2 yet.
Oh, it's darker and meaner.
Yeah, that's all I hear is how grim and bleak it is, and I just haven't had the guts to go there yet. But
the Big Little Lies is when people fall in love with characters and they don't want them to go away.
Yeah,
exactly.
And in film, you can continue on. We can't make Leanne Moriarty sit down and do a sequel. You know, they have done it for the film in this case, but you know, how many times have you finished a book and you've you've either tweeted your author saying, write another one, you know, and they're going, dude, that's old. I'm moving on.
Five books down now since that, yeah.
It's weird because it never would have happened once upon a time, but now it's happening all the time. And it happened
Sherlock Holmes, he had to keep writing. He got stuck and, the fans just kept coming at him.
And begging for more.
Begging for more, and he had to go and, you know, and he was like, I'm over this, dude, please.
No, I just meant it never would have happened in the past of the time of TV and film that a book would be over and they would just carry on. Like, did it used to happen? I just can't think. It's sort of something that started recently.
I think just because there's this massive upsurge. I think George R. R. Martin
opened that gateway when he just refused to finish writing his books and the TV series. And then Netflix and all this kind of
stuff started. And
everyone's like, oh, okay.
Like, we'll just make it.
Well, I mean, Bond is one of those ones where they would have gone on and done things that just don't exist.
Yeah.
Bourne, they've gone on and done Bournes that don't really relate.
I didn't realise that some of the Bourne movies don't relate.
Yeah, it sort of just wandered off in the same direction. So there's a few things like that which and, you know, they take so much licence with these books in the first place.
They do.
So something that's so far off from what you... That's why everyone should read the book regardless, because you're going to get more whatever you do in a book because...
You can.
Well, it takes 9 hours to read it, and it takes 2 hours to watch the film. They've got to leave out something.
The human imagination.
To finish up, why don't we say what we're currently reading, and do we think it would make a good movie or show?
I'm reading the Kate Morton Clockmaker's Daughter, and yes, all of Kate Morton's would make good TV.
Yeah,
shows.
They would actually.
They would, yeah. I mean, beautifully visual as well.
Yeah. I just finished that.
Okay.
And I'm part of the way through Muse of Nightmares by Lady Gaga. So I've already said that. That I think that would make
that would be incredible.
One that I reckon would be a really good just TV
mm-hmm.
movie. All in one go at 100 million miles an hour is the Caroline Ogrinton's latest one. The ones you trust.
Actually, yeah, that would make a really good, because that's kind of a, it's not really a series, but they're.
It's all like, it all happens so, in such an intense period.
Mm.
It's like a 24.
No, but I mean her kind of vague series that she's got going where they all have one in the title and they've got like similar covers and they're very different stories. But I think that you could make one of those type of shows out of it, kind of like Black Mirror, where they're unrelated, but they all kind
they all of...
Yeah, yeah, I think it would be great.
Well, I'm reading Light Years by Cass Morgan, who wrote The 100, and that was turned into a show. It's a very successful show, so I can definitely... I'm about halfway through and really enjoying it. I can see that as a fun little sci-fi series, so...
I bet you the rights have already been sold.
Probably, that's nice. Well, there we go. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.